Welcome to the Queer Arabs podcast. This is Alia.
This is Nadia.
And Ellie.
And we have a guest on. I'm so stoked to talk to her. I'll let you introduce yourself. Just describe things that you're involved in at the moment.
Great, awesome. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Nahid. I am a Sudanese artist and activist, I guess you would say, as well. I was born in Sudan, in Khartoum, and came to the U.S. when I was 8 years old. Learned English and, you know, grew up, had multiple identity crises, figuring out who I was and kind of my place in the world, and kind of found art and creativity to be my release and my guide kind of towards life and liberation and unlearning a lot of the things that I kind of grew up thinking were normal. And this just the journey of finding myself. So as an artist and as an individual. Yeah. That's me. Yeah.
Hey.
Very cool.
Which part or parts of the US were you growing up in?
When we first moved, we moved to Boston and lived there for a few months and then moved to Western Massachusetts in Amherst. So me and my mom and my sister resided there, and I grew up there basically the majority of my life, went to high school there, and then left and went to Philly for school at Temple University, and then shortly after that left and went to San Francisco and lived there for 13 years, and just recently moved back to Western Mass to help take care of my grandma because she has dementia and it's too much for my mom by herself, so gotta step in and kind of just like hold down the fort with them and just kind of help her as she helped me my entire life, just care for her.
Oh, wow.
Continue that cycle. So yeah.
Wow. Dementia is such a journey to walk someone through.
Oh, it really is.
Yeah.
It's taught me so much about patience and living in the moment and kind of just being true to whatever reality we are in right now, instead of resisting that, like going with that and seeing what other memories we can like bring forward from that and how we can like come back to self, come back to less anxiety, come back to less worry, less disorientation, and like how do we navigate that with care for one another and like care for myself while I'm doing that. And it's been very challenging but also very beautiful.
The point about apologies, I'm on a lag, I didn't mean to talk over you, Alia.
No, go ahead.
The part about like it teaching you to live in the moment, I remember when my grandmother was still alive and had dementia for several years, I think like a point of frustration of my mom dealing with her was like she would want to bring her back into reality with a capital R, like the reality, this reality that's happening right now. Like this need to like pull somebody back into the same present that we're experiencing. And I think like the thing that I could do is just kind of be like, that's not my business. That's not my business if she's somewhere else and experiencing somewhere else. And I just want to like, I just want to sit in whatever that is with her, you know?
Absolutely. And I really feel like there's no bringing someone back unless you're meeting them where they are.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like, you know, I have to join her in the reality that we're in and kind of investigate why this is the feeling and this is the moment that's being brought up in order to help her, you know, come back to where we are right now instead of forcing it to happen. I think both me and my mom are kind of like learning that as we kind of go through that. And I also think that like, what's interesting is that I used to also teach preschool for a number of years. And I find that a lot of the work that I did with preschoolers and with early childhood development has really helped me work now with my grandma who has dementia, because it's almost like we're coming back to this childhood state and things needed to be, you know, explained in a certain way in order to be understood and redirected in a certain way or scaffold in a certain way.
So
it just, I'm very grateful for all of the things that I've experienced in my life that has led me to be able to like care for her in this way now, and kind of show up in this way. So, and learn so much about myself too, honestly. Oof, right? Like,
oh God, yeah.
It's... exhaustion and like emotional depletion also, like, you know, they take a toll and you have reactions that you're not happy with or proud of, and you're like, why am I like being an asshole right now? And you're like, oh, it's because I'm tired and I've said this thing about 100 times at this moment, so what can I do now instead to like reset myself? Like, what do I need? I also have to be aware of what my needs are in the moment while I'm caring for other people, and just like the layers of all of that, I think, and also the way to communicate with each other and like help communication happen also between my other family members. I think it's like, it's just brought me to a different place. I think just being able to see people and meet people where they are, like that's one of the biggest things I think that dementia has taught me.
Yeah. When my grandfather was kind of entering early stages, there were times when I thought, oh, he must be as frustrated as we are, because he probably is like, why aren't they getting it? Where are they?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And like just so scared too. Like, you know, I can't imagine how scared I would be if I was completely disoriented and like just all of a sudden didn't know where I was. Or all of a sudden was like, oh crap, where are all my kids? Like, have I been taken care of? Where did they go? Like, are they safe right now? Like, you know, it's such a range of emotions.
Yeah.
I think being able to just kind of be like, that's real. That's happening to you. You're feeling that.
Right.
That's real. I'm going to totally hold space for that and legitimize it and comfort you. And then also try to redirect you into being like, we are safe. They're all good. Like,
yeah.
All of these things are happening. So.
Wow. Yeah. And then also honoring your limits and your feelings too. It's,
yes.
It's a lot. It's a lot. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Also, like, you know, like the physical aspect too, because it's like, you know, sometimes when she gets mad, and especially with dementia, like there's more aggression that also happens, and that like sometimes she'll want to like hit me or be like, I'm really frustrated, or get out of my way, like, you know, and like how do you deal in that moment too when you're dealing with a loved one who's like trying to harm you, and you're trying to, but like they're not also understanding the situation. So it's like having empathy while also like caring for yourself and being empathetic to yourself in that
so
moment,
hard.
But also making sure that you're like, no, like we don't hit, like we respect each other's bodies, like I'm not hitting you, I see that you're frustrated, can you tell me again what it is that you need me to do, like do you need space for me right now, what is happening, so that I can do that, instead of like reacting and being like, wow, like why are you hitting me, and what, you know what I mean, like, and just igniting the situation more, which I think is like, yeah, again, something I definitely learned being around little
so
kids.
Tough. Yeah.
That's a hard thing to resist doing, because sometimes being reactionary feels, you know, in a very guilty way, good, because you're like, I'm asserting myself, but it's like sometimes
you have to protective of yourself too, right?
Yeah.
Like
protecting myself.
But sometimes, but you got to ask, it's like, what, who am I doing this for? And is it being helpful to what I need to do?
Yeah.
Fact.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, we're starting off deep, like.
Yeah, we are, yeah.
We could take shallow again. I mean, well, not shallow.
I don't think anything we're going to talk about today is.
Well, okay, not shallow, but this is also deep. But I guess going back to your short personal statement, I guess, like, when did, like, art and music come into your life when you were growing up, and, like, how did that relationship develop?
Honestly, I think my sister has always been very musical, and very artistic. She loved to read, you know, she loved to dance. She loved to sing, and that was always around me. And she was always something that I just really looked up to and just was like, you know, bewildered kind of by, and it was like, oh my goodness, you amazing, magical spirit. Like, let me just follow you around and do everything that you're doing. So I think from a really early age, I just kind of gravitated towards the things that she was doing, like singing or playing the piano, and I wanted to do that, and I wanted to learn how to do that with her. It was just, it felt freeing, it felt so beautiful, and I think I at a younger age gravitated more towards like theater, and acting and dance more than like singing and music like my sister was. And so then I kind of, you know, I one of my I think my first earliest things was I in middle school I joined a summer retreat camp, an organization, I guess it was called Project 2050, and it was part of it was part of New World Theater, excuse me, which was based out of UMass and Amherst College. And it was basically a retreat for 10 days with a bunch of teenagers from all over Western Mass, and a bunch of different scholars and educators and artists that came from the, you know, New England region in general. And we would kind of come together over a theme, whether it be like immigration or exploitation, and kind of delve into what that means personally, what does that mean historically, what does that mean artistically, and how do we come up with an entire show that kind of talks about what our community experience has been over these last 10 days of collaborating, of learning all of these different things. And at the end, we would do a show at Amherst College, and this was all through middle school and high school. I was a part of this theater group, I guess you would call it, social justice theater arts, more specifically. But yeah, it was just a way that kind of bridged the creation and the all of the arts, like, because it was like writing, it was visual arts, it was dance, it was music, poetry, like everything, music under the sun, kind of combination and a culmination of performance. But it was also very personal storytelling. It was also bringing like history into a presentation about how that experience and history affects what's happening currently right now in my state of being and my future as well. And so I think that connection for me and being very early on, being very, very early on introduced into the world of human rights from my parents, both of them were political activists back in Sudan. It was one of the reasons we actually had to leave the country. Both of them were fighting for human rights. And my dad actually was writing a report about toxic waste that was being dumped outside of the capital city that was affecting communities of people and causing stillbirths, deformation, and women dying basically at childbirth or beforehand, like during their actual pregnancy. And that one specific situation, plus all of the work that he had been doing for years beforehand on human rights in Sudan, caught the attention, obviously, of the Bashir regime at the time, and he was wanted, and he went into hiding, and we had to leave the country because they threatened all of our lives. And so my mom got a job in Yemen. We went to Yemen and were living there. My dad was still in Sudan in hiding and eventually caught. He was caught and detained and put into a ghost house, which is a torture house. There's hundreds of them all over Sudan, hundreds in the capital city alone, and them everywhere. They'll either take over old abandoned buildings, like the Citibank ghost house was where he was being held. Or even within prisons. The torture can happen anywhere, at a police station, on the street, honestly, really anywhere. And he was tortured for 4 months and then released on the basis of basically kind of being a spy within the human rights organizations that he was in. And also because my mom and other people outside of the country were pressuring and letting international bodies know, like Amnesty International, that my dad was being held there. And so he received a package from them, and I think that that was when he said the torture kind of stopped and they started treating him differently because somebody on the outside knew where he was, knew that he existed, knew that he was being held. And after his release, my mom and his colleagues were able to plan his escape out of the country, and he came and joined us in Yemen. And he was obviously a completely different person, and that affected our entire family. And then, unfortunately, the civil war broke out in Yemen, and we were evacuated to the States shortly after that. And that's when we landed in Boston. But that journey, and then my dad immediately joining Amnesty International when we got to Amherst, and having the rest of our family also join, and having to go to, you know, every Saturday morning table, all of the meetings, do tag sales to raise money for whatever cause we were raising money for, and then joining an organization that he built, which is the Group Against Torture in Sudan. GATS is the name for it. But so it's a collective of torture survivors from Sudan who are trying to advocate and locate all of the different torture centers in Sudan and kind of like make a map of them, as well as making sure that when somebody gets taken, that immediately their people find out where they are, their location is broadcasted to people outside of the country so that we know where they are and that, you know, they know, at least people know where that person is and they can be held accountable. So that culmination of activism work with my father and mother, plus very early on kind of being introduced to the world of arts, melded and kind of just like formulated who I wanted to be and what I wanted to do when I joined Project 2050. And shortly after the first summer of being in middle school of doing Project 2050, I decided I was also going to go to the performing arts high school instead of the regular high school, which my sister had gone to beforehand. And I was very like worried and scared because, you know, it was just like a bunch of weirdos and I was trying to like fit in and, you know, there were queer people there and I wasn't queer, you know, I couldn't
you
be.
You weren't queer?
Oh, no, I wasn't. But, you know, I was doing everything I could to get closer and closer to that, even though I was in very much denial of like wanting to be like, no, I was like, I'm just like really artistic and like, I just love everybody. And like, you know, all the lies that you tell yourself to try to assimilate. And I was like, I'm already different enough. Like there doesn't need to be anything else. And I'm not sure if I even let myself have the full thoughts at that state in my life, in middle school. I think it was just more like, I'm just like a free loving person. And like, that's just like who I am. And I love people for their personality, but like, I'm not trying to have sex with like other people that aren't men. Lies. You know what I mean?
Of course not.
But it was just, you know, I just hadn't gotten, I think, there. But honestly, I feel like that shift and being able to go to the Pioneer Valley Performing Arts High School and being around other people who were just trying to figure out who they were and be themselves and be okay with that and collectively be in a school where all of us were kind of getting made fun of by the mainstream felt like, all right, well, just like let it go and let's just be weird together. Like, fuck it.
Right.
Like, you know, like I got some comrades now. Like, we're good. Yeah. Like, I'm good to go. So, just that shift. And I think just having the freedom of kind of learning through the arts of being able to do my history presentation through a song, you know, about how fucked up Andrew Jackson was or like whatever. So I loved every aspect of it. And then I think that's, it just kept going from there. I went on.
Oh my God. What a great crew to spend those years with. That's awesome.
Yes. Yes. No, honestly, it was,
it's the best.
Yeah. We had another high school right next to us that often would try to make fun of us. And one time they wrote faggot on like a big poster board and like tried to put it outside of their bus window. And they were like driving by our school and we were all like outside, but they spelled faggot wrong. And so we were all dying, laughing, like just dying. And they like couldn't understand. They were getting so mad on the bus while we were like just hysterically dying. And we were like, wow, like you tried so hard, but you failed so hard. So,
how did they spell it? Did they miss a G? Did they like miss a G or something?
They used a U. Like
they used
just,
a U.
Yeah.
Before the T.
Else. Yeah, we're going somewhere else. Like we put in a whole letter. You know
what
I mean?
That's a it's whole fine. Other direction. Yeah.
Yep.
Man.
So that was a good try on their part.
And it's also like that's as creative as they could get.
Exactly. So I was like, that's sad. Like
very sad for them.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I love it.
Yeah.
I think even as a full-fledged adult, I'm like a little bit jealous of performing arts high schoolers. Like I always wanted to go to one and my parents wouldn't let me, and I like still feel a little bit jealous.
It does sound so fun. It's like when Nadia and I were living at the same place during quarantine and we watched all of Glee, and this just gives me that vibe. And it's like, okay, that's our only vicarious It
was
thing.
not glee-like at all. It was like far more weird,
Good,
and like a little
good.
more gothy, which I enjoyed as well. But
Love it.
yeah, it was. I mean, we had it all. Like, you know, there were still like the
Yep.
cliques and like the popular kids and like I don't
Yeah.
even know how, like, all like being there at that school, there were still the subdivisions. Everybody still tried to divide themselves. And
Yeah.
it was also like a very white space. And so that was also very hard because coming
Yeah.
from the public schools and having a lot more diversity and then being one of the only like three people of color in my class, like
Well,
entire class,
wow.
grade, you know, like not so it
Holy
just
crap, yeah.
yeah. And it was a small school, but like, you know, just it was just not very diverse, even though there were amazing teachers and people that were there, but it
Yeah.
just was very white.
No.
And so that part was hard.
Probably especially Massachusetts.
You know, so but you
Yeah.
know, we moved on and we
Yeah.
continued
Yeah.
forward, and I think like I'm now more grateful for that experience. I think like when I was in it, I was just like, I can't wait to be done with high school. I'm so over all the shit. Like, you know,
Yeah.
I just was, I think, still definitely in denial of the fact that I was queer all then as well. It wasn't even until college that I was even recognizing glimpses of who I really was. And even though like I had other people in my life who were queer, that were a part of my life, and I was no longer at least this person like who, you know, was 12 and saying that's so gay. At least I knew that that wasn't okay anymore. And I was still like, I don't think was allowing myself to fully let go of these expectations of who I was supposed to be, within my family, within my culture, within my religion, within my whateverness that somebody was trying to put on me. And I think it wasn't until I got to college, and even then, I was just so wrapped up with like, I had to also have like a job when I was there. I was working 30 hours a week and taking 21 credits and just like doing the best I could to get everything that I needed to get done. And so I just was like, I gotta go to class. I gotta, you know, do all of my like theater things. I gotta be in my extracurricular like activism work that I'm doing here, still advocating for Sudan. And doing events, and like, I don't have time. Like, when is there time to like figure out who I am? And so I was just in the same kind of like patterns, I think, of behavior in terms of my personal relationships. But I was, I think, definitely finding more and more that I'm gravitating towards people who are just more open and accepting of human beings, period. But yeah, it wasn't, I think, really until, and I like, I had, you know, definitely crushed on people and like tried to be like, oh, hi, like, let's cuddle and like think you were my
Yeah.
best friend, like,
Which
and
is
we're not.
so
You know what I
close.
mean? Like, all of the
Yeah.
things in between, but like, not living, like, still living in denial in my own body,
Yeah.
even though like I knew that this was definitely a part of who I was. Even I always was just like, I love people, and people be like, would you have a type? And I'd be like, I don't understand what that means. Like, what is a type? Like, if I connect with you, then like, cool. I might not always want to fuck you, but like, maybe sometimes, like, you know what I mean? Maybe that will all culminate at some point. But I just never wanted to be constrained into labels. I hated having to even check off boxes whenever I took a test or anything. I was just like, why? I was like, why? Just give me a paragraph space and I will tell you my life story. You know, like,
It's so
but
frustrating that
yeah, so I
kind of,
just think that I was already kind of trying to break these barriers. But it wasn't until I finally went to San Francisco after college that I think I was like, I'm gonna go for it. Like, I'm gonna go for all of it. I'm just gonna see what happens with being who I am. And, you know, I think it wouldn't have happened if I didn't meet my partner. We used to work together, actually. She used to be my boss. So, not really. But then we, like, we quickly were like, oh, I'm into you. Like, if I want to date you, like, you can't be my boss. I quit this job. Bye. So like everything was fine,
love
like nothing was inappropriate. Well, yeah,
It's okay
but
if it was a little
yeah, just a
bit.
little
Yeah,
bit. It could be a little
just a
unprofessional, not
touch,
overall.
just a touch. Yeah,
But I think it wasn't until
it's
then,
fine.
and even then, that discovery
Yeah.
of being like, I'm into this person and I don't want to hold back and I want to like have a whole ass relationship with this person. And
Yeah.
then I just did, and I like ended up leaving the person that I was with for almost 6 years at that time, who's a man.
Yeah.
And you know, and realized that I was like doing a lot of things in that relationship for like almost 3 years of kind of being like, yeah, like we should really like have a threesome with like that really hot like
Yeah.
waitress at the sushi place, or like we should really like just, I was like just doing it all wrong. Do you know what I mean? Like just doing it
Right.
all wrong. And so I
Yeah.
was like, I just need to accept. And I was like, why have I been so unhappy for so many years? And I was like, oh, right, because it's like this is just not what I want.
Yeah.
And yeah, so just I think, and just figuring out like what does that mean? What do I want? And just having this other person who was just like, I just love you as a human being. You don't have to be with me. I just want you to be
Right.
happy. And right now you're really unhappy. So how can I support you to just be yourself and like live your life and be happy? And I
Yeah.
was like, wow, people like that exist? Whoa,
Yeah.
I want to
Never
be in
let this
community with
person
you. I'm
go.
obsessed, you know?
Yeah.
Never let this person go.
I haven't. It's been 14 years. I haven't. Like, I locked that shit down.
14.
Yeah, I locked that
Oh.
shit down. It's a wrap.
Oh shit.
It's a wrap. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. That's so
So.
beautiful. And what better place? San Francisco. Oh, I can't
Yeah.
for that, all that like awakening experience. Oh,
Yeah. And
so
it's so funny because one of my cousins was like, did you go there like to be gay? And I was like, no.
I.
And I was like, I was already gay. Like,
It's
I don't know. But I was like,
not
I
like
just.
it's because San Francisco happened to
Yeah, I was
me.
like, it's not because San Francisco is super gay. Like, that's not also why. I was like, I just am. So
Yeah.
I was obviously going there for a reason. So.
Right.
It's like people don't go to San Francisco to be gay. Well, at least they go because they go there because it's much easier to be gay there.
Yes,
Yeah.
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, oh, I remember in high school, like this is just bringing me back. In high school, I had this friend from Ethiopia. In her culture, it was really, really common to just like hold your friend's hands, like, like intertwine your fingers and stuff like that.
In my culture
So,
as well, absolutely.
oh, okay,
Even
yeah.
men,
So
like
she
with each
would,
other, completely fine.
yes, yeah. And so she would do that, and I would like feel all like, I would feel something, and I was like, oh my God, she was holding my hand. And for her, it was just like, this is friendship. And so after high school, when I reflected back, I was like, oh, that was a crush. And wow, I like how I was feeling when she held my hand, that was not like a straight feeling.
No.
Not
But like
especially.
why we were jittery. Like
Not quite. Yeah, it wasn't very straight of me. But yeah, it took time to get there.
Straighter things have been
Absolutely.
done than
Straighter things have been felt, yes. Like for her, I think it was quite straight. For me, definitely not. But it just took me a long time to admit that to myself.
Absolutely.
It's a tough age.
Maybe this is a weird question, but what was the job that y'all met at?
We worked at an after school program together.
Huh.
She was the director of an after school program, and
Oh.
I did like tutoring and enrichment programs. So I did like drama and dance and
Oh, awesome.
whatever activities. Yeah,
Yeah.
so that's kind of how we met.
Love it.
Yeah, at a middle school of all places.
Oh.
Full circle.
That's really
So.
cute. Yeah, that is so full circle.
Yeah, it really
Like,
was. And we started
yeah.
off as friends, and so that's why I think I wasn't
Yeah.
expecting to be like, whoa, I
Yeah.
have the most intense feelings I've ever had in my life. Like,
Yeah.
I've
Yeah.
never felt this way about any other person. So this is wild, like what is
Right.
happening. Yeah, and just like I don't, yeah, it was just, yeah, you know, it started all off with a drunken call, drunken missed
Oh.
call while I was with my sister and cousins, and you know, just was
Yeah.
obviously thinking about her and wanted to call, but then didn't know I was calling, and so it's just like background noise from the pizza place. And then obviously she called me back, and I was like, oh my God, the next day. And I was like, I gotta just do it. And I was like, hey, you wanna go on a date? And then,
Oh
yeah,
yeah. Did you just straight
I
up?
just straight up
That, I
texted, was like,
love
hey, you wanna go on a
that.
date? I was like, obviously, I drunk
Yes.
called you yesterday, so this is where we're at.
I love it.
Yeah. It's just, it's so interesting. And I think, like, the more, yeah, just the realization that I could love so freely and honestly and be loved that way in return, I think it opened something else up in me. It allowed me to be like, why am I holding on to safety nets? Like, I gotta make the leap of faith. Like, every time I'm like, when I made this jump, it worked out. So, like, bet on yourself, believe in yourself. And especially as an artist, too, I think the relationship and the love and support that I received from my partner and still receive has really
Yeah.
allowed me to do all of the things that I want to do and go after the things that I want to go after,
Yeah.
in ways that I haven't, like, and I've definitely been supported by my family before, but like in a relationship, I think, in that sense, ever before. And so just being able to be like, yeah, like you want to quit your job as a full-time teacher with benefits to join a band and see where that takes you, do it. And I was like, fuck yeah, you're right. I should just do it. I'm quitting my job.
What is this level of support, and how do I get this?
I mean, I don't know. Honestly, I'm always just like, how are you who you are? But I'm just like, I'm so grateful because I'm also bringing it correct. You know what I mean? Like, I'm holding it down. I'm supporting you. I'm like, and your dreams and all the things that you want to do. And I think honestly, I just never found somebody who wants to just continue growing and changing together and just having open conversations, even when they're really hard. And just trying to do everything with care and like coming back when we do harm each other and addressing it like immediately or the next day. I don't know. I've just never been around someone who wants to put in work every single day and wants to like. And so it makes me want to do that too. And also it's like I want to be this person. I want to be the best person I can be for myself and for this relationship. And then for all these other relationships, I want to show up this way and I want other people to show up this way. And it just reminds me of like all these inner revolutions that we have and like how we change the world is literally by changing ourselves, by changing the way we are with each other, by changing what we expect from one another and how we treat each other, how we treat the planet, how we interact, like the little thing and the micro thing, like in our communities are like what ripple effects into the way that we can be on a larger scale. And it's not going to be this like utopia where we all get along all the time and we all want the same fucking things. No, that'd be boring as hell also, but like it's a place where we can actually come to communicate with genuine care and respect and like everyone's safety, health, and needs are prioritized equally. And I'm just like, that starts with our relationships with ourselves and like with our relationships with our immediate families and partnerships, and then with our relationships with our community. Like, how we interact on all of those levels is kind of the same. And so, if any one of those things is off balance, your relationship with self, your relationships with the people closest to you, your relationships with the community and the land and the water and the air around you, it fucks your whole cycle and it fucks the cycle that we're all living in together. And so it's like, how do I do that reflection like in real time every single day? Like, how do I show up and be grateful? How do I assess and criticize what needs to be criticized and come up with solutions, not just complain? How do I engage in actual community care? And like, how do I engage in self-care and not in a frivolous way either, in like a true committed way every single day I show up for myself, just like I'm showing up for all the things that I believe in and all of the people that I love. Yeah, so I think just like the more I'm trying to understand all of the things about who I am and the relationships that I seek and the creations that I want to make, whether that be, you know, with the Nubatones, with my sister, with in Masafa, the other project that we have, also with my sister and Sarah Michaels, and with the other things that I want to be doing and contributing to. What stories do I want to tell? What things do I want to be a part of archiving? And what creations and cultivations of dreams do I want to support? So I'm trying to evaluate all of that while continuously learning about myself.
Which is hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out, what's my question here? What am I trying to ask? I guess I'm curious about, well, because you have like such a family relationship to like capital A activism because of your parents and what your father experienced. And you're also an activist in your own right, but in a maybe less capital A way, if you'd say it, like more through relational work and art. I guess I'm wondering how those two things like kind of sit together in your head, because not everybody has that, like such a strong background of like connection to very material direct human rights work. I think sometimes some of the people who talk about art and activism are, you know, a little fluffy. maybe kind of it's a bit of a reach in the way that they say their art is related to social change, but I think for a lot of people that's a very real thing. It's like you're saying, it's like almost biological, like you are, like we are literally part of the world, we affect the world through just being alive and moving and breathing. And I'm not entirely sure where I'm going with this question, like I said, but yeah, I'm just wondering how you kind of square those ideas in your brain.
I think it's reminding me of something that my sister says a lot, which is like, my body, my experience is politicized. So it's almost like I don't have a choice to respond to what is happening in the world, to the things and people that directly affect me or my being. And so it's like, I don't know. It's like, I don't see that there is any other way besides to change the systems that are operating right now, because it has never been sustainable. I came into this world with people fighting with every fiber of their being against what was happening in this world and what's happening to other people. And so I just, and to planet. And I think to me, everything that calls me as a being is also just that, is to fight for justice, is to fight for true liberation, is to unlearn all of the things that and ways that I'm harming myself and other people and other things. And I think that that is just the life learning process. I've never been able to separate any of those things or even creativity, creation, because I feel like even in that self, it is a way of telling your story. It is a way of archiving a part of history. It is a way of expression and giving voice to things that are not being recognized or forgotten purposefully. I just feel like I've never seen it any other way, and so I understand and I can sympathize, I think, or like empathize with people who are removed more from it or who maybe have had more privilege, and even recognizing the privileges that I have of being removed from being in Sudan currently or having to face the war and being displaced already once, twice. Just I can empathize with it, but I'm also just like, this is where we are, this is where we've always been, and it's like, how are we going to show up? Like, whatever it is that we need to do in order to be in right relation with one another and with this planet is what's necessary right now. And so I need to unlearn my capitalist behaviors and tendencies and things that I've been programmed into thinking that I want and need when I know I don't. And when I know that there is an abundance of resources that we can all have if it was actually shared.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I want to, yeah, I think that if you're feeling that your activism is fluffy or surface because you are removed from the suffering or the pain, I think you need to let go of your savior complex and realize that what's happening to other people affects you, and you are a part of what's happening to other people. You're a part of that pain and suffering. And to check that reality that, like, you're not here to save anyone or anything if you're not here to save yourself. And so, I don't know, like, just fucking let go of that shit, like, look inside more. I don't know, but it seems to me that there's no time for this kind of, like, removed behavior. And it's also, like, so fake. Like, solidarity is a verb. It means action. It means doing things and showing up in real ways for people and planet. And if that's not what you're doing in your work, then reevaluate what that is. Like, you don't need to give up. You just need to, like, reevaluate and reassess. And that's something that we should all be doing every single day. So,
yeah.
I guess I'll leave it at that. Starting to pop.
I mean, no, I mean, it's accurate. And I was also going to say, you know, saying solidarity is a verb. I'm just like, you know, I'm suddenly super annoyed at people who stand in solidarity and just stand.
I guess it really depends on where you're standing.
Yeah. And like, are you like part of a barricade, or are you just like standing in your living room and taking an Instagram photo and saying it's distinctions, I guess.
You can also sit in solidarity, depending.
Yeah, you can sit in solidarity.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of physical orientations you can have.
But I hear your annoyance. Like, I hear that aspect of being like, we're not just here to like say we love everybody and then not change any of our behaviors, right? Mm-hmm. Like that is why it's annoying, because you know it's like a verb means like we're taking action, we're doing something moving and grooving. And if you're just not doing anything and just saying that, like, yeah, you should have rights, like people should care about you, okay, like I'm gonna go back to like going to Starbucks and get my like latte and like buy my fast fashion shit and like not care about the economy and or the globe or whatever, like anything. So I just, yeah, I understand your annoyance, because I often get really annoyed and I have a lot of rage, so I am here for that.
Yeah, thank you for making sense of my half-baked question. I didn't mean to make it so much about my annoyance, but I guess like the context for that is that I also work in arts nonprofits, and I'm having some feelings about like what gets funded and what gets supported. So that is part of it. Thank you for going with that.
My perspective is from the corporate side of things, where we have several interest groups where we submit stuff to management. And one of the things is like, they're like, oh, we care about mental health. And like, can you expand our mental health coverage then?
No.
Silence.
Mm-hmm. Silence. You're like, oh, so you can't put money towards it? We're just gonna have fake meetings and you're going to give me some cookies and I'm supposed to be so grateful?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I wish we got cookies. Everything's fully remote here, so... I don't even get cookies.
Oh no, you don't even get cookies. You don't even get the. You don't get the free pizza or the. We are a family.
Yeah, like am I at least getting a meal out of this? Like,
yeah, right.
No, nothing.
No.
Okay, well that's just rude then.
So it's just we are a family. Like, we are family emails with no pizza. That sucks.
And you're like, we heard all of your concerns, and we are not going to do anything.
Yeah, we don't.
But we heard them. So can you clap for me real quick? Because I heard you.
And you are heard.
Yeah. I can't.
We are holding space.
Holding space. Love it. So yeah, what are some of the things that you are working on now as far as your creative work, your organizing, some of that combined, anything that you want to highlight?
Okay, yeah. In terms of my organizing work, I am still working with my dad with Group Against Torture in Sudan. Currently right now trying to collect more testimonies of torture from the past 2 years in this counter-revolutionary war, and then also trying to see if we can in any way put together some kind of civil lawsuit with torture survivors who are currently stateside, and kind of seeing where that leads us. Right now we're just collecting a lot of information and trying to have meetings and gain more knowledge about the legal system from the Center for Justice and Accountability that's based in San Francisco, and just kind of figure out a plan of what we want to do with the information and the testimonies that we're gathering. So that's one aspect of something that I'm doing. The other aspect is I'm working with my sister fundraising for Sanduga Sudan. Sanduga Sudan is an initiative that was started by her and some of her other colleagues and activists to basically create a mutual fund box. Sandug just literally means box in Arabic, that funds will go into and then will be distributed to different emergency response rooms or organizations or people on the ground who are trying to help in any way, whether that be doing community kitchens, whether that be providing sanitary pads, whether that be providing blankets, whether that be providing food, whether that be providing medical supplies, whatever the case may be that is needed, doing that. And then, so that's one thing that we're doing and continuously trying to raise funds for. We've already been able to raise two rounds of $10,000 each, so $20,000 that we were able to send to emergency response rooms and people working on the ground in Sudan, and just trying to continue that mutual aid initiative. So those are two things that I'm working on. I'm also currently working on
making a toolkit for the emergency response rooms / anybody really that wants to use it. Basically a bunch of different activities that you can do with young children, 0 to 5, as well as a little bit older children, and then teenagers, as well as with community members of all ages, that is centered basically around trauma-informed care, activities that help you heal in terms of your nervous system, being able to calm down, being able to redirect, and being able to kind of build community relations. I used a bunch of different tools from the Be the Change consultancy that my partner actually got trained in, and I was able to kind of get trained in from her on that. And so being able to use those tools, being able to put in developmentally appropriate activities for all the different age groups so everybody can do it, including YouTube videos of like different stretches that you can do in the morning, or activities to like kind of like build group care, or like how do we build our community core values together? All these like kind of different tools that I've used throughout the years, science experiments, like, and then also trying to edit all of the information, since it's not something that like I'm writing myself. I'm putting together all of these resources and tools that I've used over the past, trying to also edit them so that they can also be appropriate for somebody receiving them in that situation. So it's like, I'm not going to be trying to put in activities in there that require a bunch of materials that you're not going to have access to. So like, how can we do something with the minimum amount of actual physical materials, or use other materials, like use an old plastic jug for something, or a scarf instead of something else like that. And just use like whatever tools you have. You have paper, you have pencils, you have markers, you don't have markers, you have pens, you have sticks and sand. You can do something. So kind of trying to provide a variety of activities and tools that people can access and use for their own healing, as well as providing children with safe spaces and safe environments to heal and kind of process the things that they are experiencing. So that's something that I'm still working on, and I want to be able to translate it also in Arabic beforehand. So my mom is going to help me do that. She does translation work herself. And so she'll help me do that. And then after that, hopefully getting some cool graphics from some of my friends that are also visual artists and putting it together in a way that feels good to kind of receive and figure out what order that I want to put it in. So I'm hoping that by sometime early next year, I will have that toolkit put together and kind of share it with whoever wants to use it. So those are, in the terms of, I guess, like activist work that I'm doing, or human betterment work. Yeah. And in terms of performances or artistic creations, Nubatones is about to release their third album next year. It's super exciting. Hopefully by the end of February.
So excited.
I'm super excited. We've been working on it for a number of years, and COVID stopped everything for everybody. But we're trying to release it on our own terms and kind of make sure that it gets the traction that it deserves, and being able to perform. So hoping to do a lot more shows within the New England area come the beginning of the year, and then hopefully tour more internationally in Europe, North Africa. After that. So fingers crossed all goes well. But we already released our first single from the album. So if anybody wants to listen to it, it's on all of the platforms, anywhere where you can listen to music. It's out there. So please go ahead and listen, get excited. And it's the first multilingual track in both Arabic and English that we have on the album.
So other
tracks that also have a mix of both, and a track that is fully just in English and a track that is not in Arabic at all, but is in Nubian. So hopefully the mix of all of the things will kind of express the journey that we've been on as a band and as individuals.
I know we know this, but perhaps you can introduce your band for the sake of the recording.
El Sara and the Nubatones, you mean?
Yes.
Yes.
We're actually both projects.
El Sara and the Nubatones is a project that my sister El Sara started with our percussion player Rami in a long time ago, I think like 2012, maybe before that. Maybe their talk started in like 2007, because they were very much both talking about songs of return and the meanings of also having this longing of returning home someday, and the connection to home and what does that mean. And kind of that, through those dinner conversations that they had with each other, they formulated wanting to create this East African retro pop sound that my sister has labeled for ourselves. She was like, I don't like any of the labels out there. I'm making one for ourselves. I was like, this is how we roll.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So that was awesome. And just, you know, they built the first album Silt Together, which means like the mud, basically the fertile mud that anything can grow out of. So that was the first album. And I was still not part of the band at that point, but, you know, lingering and always performing with my sister and doing side things. And then eventually got the courage to quit, done with my full-time job. And then I basically went on tour with them, and then we made our second album, Manada. So that's all out there. Yeah. Anyone can listen to it, which is super exciting. And I also started learning how to play the keyboard through being a part of this band, through my sister being like, we need the sound, so you're gonna learn how to do this. I'm buying you a keyboard, let's go.
Love it.
Which is awesome. And I was like, I'm gonna learn. And so I've been learning. It's been very challenging. I am not good at all yet, but I'm getting there. You know, practice. But this third album that's coming out has me on keys, and I'm excited about it. I'm also super nervous, obviously.
Learn by doing.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, you know, fake till you make it. So that's really exciting. I'm really excited for this third album to kind of come out there and just be released. And then another project that I'm working on with my sister is called Masafa. We've released a couple of tracks already, and hoping to kind of be able to finish our album or EP by the end of 2025, summer of 2025. Hopefully we'll be releasing something. So working on that as well with her, which is really cool. That is like a English, Arabic, Nubian mesh sound. Musician Sarah Michaels. So please check that out also.
Every
There should be links to everything on my Linktree, and if there isn't, I'll make sure to update it tonight so that all the links are on.
Perfect.
Check it out. Yeah, and then the last thing that I'm working on is I just got a role to be in a Sudanese film called White Musk that's going to be shooting in Austin, Texas, January. So it's my first time ever doing a film. I'm really excited about it, and I'm really excited about the character and the story, kind of about multi-generational trauma, relationships between mothers and their children, and this kind of expectation to be caregivers in our families, and what does that mean, and what does the relationships mean, and how does that show up, and how does taking care of somebody that's sick affect the person who's sick and affect the people that are around them. And so I feel like it really hits home in a lot of ways for me.
I was gonna say
it's just like a combination of all of the things that are my life. So I was like, wow, perfect. So I'm really, really excited to kind of learn the process of making a film and work with this amazing director. I'm excited for all of the things and to just keep learning and growing and taking more risks and just, you know, believing in myself a little bit more and claiming the fact that I am an artist and that, you know?
Oh, that's so awesome. Like the continuation of what you've been doing for a long time, but also next year has a lot of newness for you.
Awesome.
Wow. I can't wait for you all to come to New York, and I want to see one of the New Baton show.
Hopefully you will.
I hope you guys come here.
We should hopefully be getting something in the works come end of February, beginning of March, like right when we release the album, to be doing in New York.
Figure out the tour.
Yeah, that's my sister's home base, and like the majority of the other members all live there. So I'll be letting you know.
Okay.
All of you know.
So excited. Awesome. Well, and if anyone wants to follow you on social media or anything like that, do you have a platform you use the most?
Absolutely. If you want to follow the band that I'm in, there's El Sara Nubatones on Instagram. Or there is also Masafa, the other band that I'm a part of. And actually, I forgot to mention one of my other solo projects, which is called Triune Music. So you can also listen to T-R-U-I-N-E. T-R-I-U-N-E. Girl, I can't even say
Triune.
Yeah, T-R-I-U-N-E Music. To check that out as well.
Ooh.
If you just want to follow me as a person figuring out who I am in this world, you can follow me at Nahid Elgadi, Nahidelgadi on Instagram.
I'm gonna follow all the things.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for doing this. This has been a long time vision of having you on the podcast. I met your sister, I think was it already 2 years ago?
Oh my God.
Anyway,
It might have been. Yeah,
it was around then.
Time
has flown, So this means so much to us that you did this. So
absolutely, it means so much to me. Just being able to like have a safe space to kind of just talk about how I feel, how I'm processing the world. Like I'm in a therapy session, to be honest, which is something that I did start this year. So woo.
Hey.
Therapy that everybody needs. Maybe it's not talk therapy for you, but just figure out how you're going to release people's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this is awesome. Thank you all so much for like having me. And I just hope that I can keep getting to know you all more too.
I know. Yeah. I always feel the same after almost every episode. I'm like, that felt so cathartic. It's the best.
Better than therapy for me.
Yeah.
Different than therapy.
Just different.
I think, I mean, at least I'm not crying after every episode, unlike therapy.
Also very true.
Also good to do.
Also good to do. You know what? Yeah, I'm just excited about the fact that I'm going to cry at least once in every
episode.
We gotta release.
Yeah. I think I've cried on one episode too. So it's not.
I'm surprised I did.
Yeah.
There was a couple of times where I already felt like I was getting teary. So
like kind of teary. Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing it happens to me regularly on this, but but I think I've all like fully cried once on an episode.
The thing about podcasts is like probably no one knew, you know?
Yeah.
So everyone be sure to comment on where you think Aliyah has cried.
I know. I don't even remember when it was.
Get called out.
Yeah, but I remember listening back and be like, oh, you can definitely tell. But anyway, you all can follow us at the Queer Arabs on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and email us at thequeerarabs.com or at gmail.com. That's everything.
Right now. That's what I'm about to do. So if you're listening to this, you better get out your phone right now.
Get out your phone.
And there you go.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Follow Boohoo. That's right.
Yes.
And of course, all of Nad's links will be on our website with the podcast episode, which you can find on fine podcast providers everywhere.